seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. The number to call with your questions this morning, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Want to start the 10 o'clock hour, and Robert will get to your call in just a moment. Want to start the 10 o'clock hour with caring for houseplants. We're in that time of year. We can't treat our houseplants the same way that we do in the summer because they don't need as much water, right? And there are some special things we can do to make them look better. So let's start out with watering. Ton, how should we be watering our houseplants in the winter? Maybe it's not quite the same as in the summer.
Well, our homes are usually a bit cooler in the winter, and then also with lower light levels coming through the windows, even though it is still bright. These lower light levels, and they even have a different frequency of light coming through that just make the plants not be able to photosynthesize as efficiently. And so because of the slower plant growth and cooler temperatures, not as much water is needed in the winter. And so where you normally during the summer would water every 5 to 7 days on an average houseplant in the winter, you can usually go every 7 to 10 days.
Which is a good thing because it's been a busy week and no houseplants have been watered at my house.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot of houseplants that I grow in my office and in other areas have gone sometimes 2 weeks and still look fine. You know, you don't really want to just walk away from them, but they can go that long and be okay sometimes.
Right. So what are their general care for the houseplants in the winter?
Most houseplants, because they're not growing as quickly, and there are exceptions, don't need fertilizer in the winter months from November through February, just because of the lower light levels, cooler temperatures. It's not that they go dormant. They just slow down. And they're fine, and maybe once a month, if you want to do half-strength house fertilizer, that's fine. But you really don't need to worry as much about fertilizer unless the plants are actively blooming. And so then, you know, the Christmas and Thanksgiving cacti, the calancho, the cyclamen, those would need some fertilizer because they're flowering. But if they're just foliage plants, they're usually fine through the winter without it.
So something like the calancho, I can't usually get to bloom for very long. Will the fertilizer keep them blooming longer?
It won't necessarily keep them blooming longer if you just start fertilizing when they start blooming. But if they get adequate fertilizer through the season, then they may bloom longer just because they have sufficient nutrients in the soil to do so.
Right. We usually pay a little more attention to our houseplants when we get into January and February because we can't be outside. So it's a good time to do some repotting. How would we know when we should repot or when it's just okay to just add some soil to maybe a bigger pot?
Well, the general rule is that potting soil breaks down over a period of 2 to 3 years. And so you want to transplant most plants every other year. Some of them that can be a little bit more root bound, such as the Christmas cactus and the, what's the big Christmas flower?
Poinsettia. No.
Huge flowers, and then goes dormant. Oh, no.
Amaryllis.
Sorry. Amaryllis.
You caught me off guard. I wasn't thinking about it.
Yeah. But amaryllis, Christmas cactus can be a little more root bound, but those need to be transplanted about every 3 years. But just because the soil breaks down, winter is a good time to put these into new, slightly larger pots. You usually step up to a pot that's at least 2 inches wider and deeper than the one you had.
Do our plants need to be moved around because they're getting less light?
they can be turned. And if you say you have plants on an east window that require bright light, moving them to a west or south window in the winter can be beneficial. But at least turn them 180 degrees once a week or every a couple of weeks.
Yeah, when you have those plants with the bigger leaves and you want the, I always have to dust them because they start looking pretty grimy. But talk a little bit about leaf shine and how it works and why we shouldn't maybe use mayonnaise because TikTok tells us we should.
Well, the leaf shine products, if you are having a party or something, leaf shine is something that some maintenance companies especially use on a weekly basis to keep plants really happy. But once you start using it, it's almost like you're addicted to it because it will actually over time attract more dust. And so it's almost like you have to go in and carefully clean the leaves you sprayed it on and then reapply it if you're going to. But if you're just using it now and again, it does. And so if you're just using it now and again, it's fine. But if you're using it weekly, it will need to be washed off because of the buildup.
Yeah, I was going to say, and just don't put so much, like don't leave it gooey. Just make sure
just a light spritz.
Yeah,
but it's very common for florists and other retailers, grocery stores and things to use leaf shine, especially if it is in a display for a funeral or a wedding or something for the foliage plants used in those displays to have leaf shine on them.
It sounds like they're just spraying them. I actually spray it and then just kind of gently with the bigger like rubber plant leaves, I kind of gently wipe it so that it doesn't collect more dust.
Correct. Yeah. And that's a good thing to do. And, you know, sometimes these maintenance companies will take a sponge and gently hold the leaves if they're thick enough, like on a fiddly fig or a rubber tree plant, and actually wash them to get the dust off and then reapply the leaf shine when they're done.
Does dust actually hurt plants?
Not necessarily.
It has to be a lot of dust, right?
If it's dry, it can attract spider mites. For some reason, spider mites love dust.
Hmm.
But, or at least you find them in dusty areas quite frequently, but it doesn't necessarily hurt them. If you have too much, it will interfere a bit with photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add about caring for houseplants during the winter?
Just be sure to keep them away if you can from heat registers. The dry air, we're already down below 10% humidity indoors in the winter. And then when you're using forced air heating that's coming through those heat registers, it can further dry your plants out. And so keep them away from the direct path of the warm air.
One of our listeners is sad that we don't have the Twisted Sister Christmas bumper that Dave Meekum likes to play.
And Dave hates Dave playing off. It, and he promised and didn't.
Is that what happened?
Yes. Last time he played our Christmas music, he was like, that might be in the mix today, and it never came.
Never did.
Yep.
Okay, that's what happened there. All right, we're going to take a break. Robert, your call is up first when we come back. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500, and you can find out more about how to care for house plants on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. We've given Dan Bomas a heart attack. He thinks that it's time for the news at 10:18. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Remember, it's a couple days before Christmas. Or maybe not at our absolute best, but thank you for being with us this morning. Robert has been waiting very patiently in Heber Valley. Robert, good morning. What was your question? And did we lose Robert? And it looks like we may have lost Robert. Let's go to our next listener, who is Michael and Sandy. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning and Happy New Year.
Almost there, right?
Yeah, almost. And it's snowing up here. I have a cabin up on Tabby Mountain in Duchesne County at an elevation of about 7,400 feet. And we have a lot of what appears to be scrub oaks. And over the few years, I've noticed that the tops of the trees are starting to turn brown, but the rest of the leaves and the branches are very vibrant in color. Is there something going on? And of course, it's all natural up there. There's no watering or irrigation.
Well, Maria can attest to this. The scrub oak seemed to have had a fungal disease or something in them in areas that's completely taken them out. But in your situation, could there have been above the snow line, maybe a frost or extreme cold that took the tips out, while the bottoms of the trees that were under the snow are fine?
That's a possibility. About 4 or 5 years ago, we got to about minus 10 degrees.
And that shouldn't be cold enough to affect the native oak. If it were minus 40, it may have done that. But if it was only 10 below, that unless we went from the 50s down to 10 below in a 24-hour period, that shouldn't have done it. But if it is hillside-wide, that's usually something environmental and not necessarily a disease.
Okay. All right. So, and there was no heavy deep frost anyway like that.
Yeah. And so I don't know. There could be a lot of different things. With our native oaks, they're not really heavily studied because there's so many pests and diseases that just get into them, and they're generally fine, but you can also all of a sudden find a whole grove of them that things like this happen, and you're just like, I don't know, because it's just one of those, you know, it's not like an ornamental we're growing in our yards, and right. There's so many different things in those wild areas that can affect them. Now, watch them and see if it's progressing down the tree. And if it's moving down the tree and more of the trees are dying, then it definitely could be a fungal or bacterial disease. But if it's holding and no more of the tree is dying, I think something happened environmentally that has caused it.
Okay. Well, that's good to look for. I appreciate the help. It's always been a quandary up there, what's going on with the oaks.
Michael, Merry Christmas. Thank you so much for calling.
You too. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Same to you. Bye-bye. Let's get back to Robert's question. We lost Robert. He had been on the line for a little bit in Heber. He wanted to ask you, Ton, about cutting limbs off of trees. When is it appropriate this time of year to cut limbs off of trees?
It's not really appropriate right now.
If they're dead, though?
If they're dead, yes. Dead or diseased can always come out. Or if they're a strong safety hazard, if it looks like it's going to fall on your home, or if it is going to, you know, cause an obstruction so people can't see. But because especially this year, we have not really been below 25 degrees mm-hmm. at night, and we've been in the 40s and 50s during the day, the trees aren't dormant, even though the leaves dropped, and the roots aren't dormant. And until we're consistently in the teens and maybe upper single digits, the trees are still not finished going dormant for the year. And so any pruning needs to happen after the trees are fully dormant, just because they'll be less sensitive to it. And that usually happens in mid to late January.
Now, he was in Heber Valley. Would that be different from him? Wouldn't it be a little bit colder there?
A little, but not cold enough. Not much, huh? And so they may reach full dormancy by mid-January, but that mid to late January time period still holds for when to start pruning your shade trees if you need to.
Okay. Next listener wants to know, can they move a flowering crabapple tree that's about 4 inches in diameter, needs to be moved about 4 feet away from their driveway?
Maybe. It's one of those things that you almost need a professional to come in and do. They would have to dig a trench around the tree, probably at least 3 feet wide and about 2 feet deep. Mm-hmm. And you're just not going to move that on your own. You know, you would need a tree spade or something at that point, just because of the size of the tree. And if it's has a 4-inch diameter, it's probably been in for several years, and the root system's fairly extensive and not near the tree trunk. A lot of times when you purchase trees with a 3 or 4 inch trunk, nurseries have trained them through selective root pruning to keep the roots closer. Mm-hmm. And so if they moved it even 3 or 4 feet, it would be 5 to 8 years before the tree recovered and really started to grow again.
All right. Next listener wants to know about elfin thyme. They want to know if it's watered like grass. They've been growing a bunch of it as a lawn substitute because they don't have to mow it. Do they need to water it in a similar fashion as grass, or can it be watered less?
It's grown as a grass substitute because it's more drought hardy. You could water it like the grass, but you wouldn't do it as often. So maybe every 10 days or so you would water it, maybe even 2 weeks, depending on your soil type.
Okay, I'm looking up Elfin Thyme because I want to know how it's different
gorgeous
from the little thyme
plant
that I have been growing, and maybe it is. Okay, so I do have some Elfin Thyme, but what happens when you walk on it?
It will tolerate light traffic, but it will not tolerate regular foot traffic. Oftentimes, these sorts of ground covers are sold as steppable or walkable.
But I planted some of those, and they were not.
No.
No.
That's silly.
Why do I believe these things?
And so what will happen is if the kids are playing football and the football lands in your Elfin Thyme patch, if they walk in and get it, it'll survive. But if you're trying to play football on top of it, it's dead.
So I see some Elfin Thyme is creeping. Are they all creeping?
Elfin Thyme has a really compact, low-growing form with small kind of waxier leaves. Doesn't get more than about 2 inches tall, but it can be called Elfin Creeping Thyme or just Elfin Thyme.
Yeah, and it's really pretty along the borders where you have like rock borders and things like
that. It is. It's commonly planted in flagstone, if you have a flagstone patio, especially around the edges where people aren't walking as much. It
but
grows in between
water.
The cracks, but less water.
Okay. Steve is on the line in Kaysville. Good morning, Steve. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning. So I have a question. I have a maple tree that I planted about 4 years ago, and it just never grew and stopped growing. So I checked in with the nursery, and they told me to wait until it was dormant, and so based on your last comments a few minutes ago, it probably wasn't dormant because I dug it up probably the end of November. But they said to dig it up and check the roots to see what the roots look like. And the roots had virtually not grown at all. So I repotted it. I replanted it. And I'm using root stimulator. Tell me if that's the good route to go. And then also, how often should I be putting that root stimulator on it through the winter to hopefully have a better outcome in the spring?
Well, I'm just going to be blunt, and I don't want to know what nursery you are dealing with, especially on the air, but you're fine moving the tree, and my comments were more specifically for pruning and not maybe digging. And so you're fine there, but that root stimulator, in a certain sense, I would have rather you gone to Wendover and just put your 20 in a slot machine. Because the root stimulator doesn't do a lot of good. It's just good, honest tree care that will, if it is going to grow new roots, that will do it.
But it's not going to hurt it.
It's not going to hurt it at all, but it's just the root stimulators. A lot of nurseries will sell them, and they may do a little bit, but it's just, if your tree lives or dies, it's not the root stimulator that did it.
Okay.
So it's just one of those things that, you know, maybe, you know, even nitrogen in the spring, I don't know that I would do, because you want those roots to reach out and grow back into the soil. What kind of tree do you have?
It's a Princeton Gold maple tree.
Okay, they're going to be slow growing already because of the yellow leaves. So they'll take longer to establish. And so it doesn't surprise me that it didn't do much in that 2 or 3 years it was in the ground. The other challenge with those trees is that they can sometimes scorch in the hot sun.
And it does tend to do that. But, I mean, it virtually grew zero. I think it maybe grew 2 inches in height, and maybe a quarter of an inch in the trunk diameter.
And so there could be a fungal disease in the roots that's slowing it down but not killing the tree. And moving it may or may not have an impact, but it's good that you tried it to see if it will help. You know, one thing that you might do just to see if you can stimulate some new growth is get a third of a cup of lawn fertilizer or a quarter cup of lawn fertilizer. How big is the tree, by the way?
It's probably maybe an inch and a half in diameter.
Okay. So, yeah, I would
10 feet tall.
Yeah, I would use a third of a cup of lawn fertilizer spread out under the tree. And put that down sometime in mid-March and just see if you can stimulate some new growth. And if that fertilizer, if the tree's not being drowned, but that fertilizer, you don't get a good 6 inches of growth on that tree at least, you may have a fungal disease in there that is just gumming things up, and the tree just may not grow.
Okay. Okay, so if I just use, like, I have a general 16-16-16 that I use on my plants.
Awesome. Yep, that's great.
Would that work?
Okay. It would work just fine, and just a quarter to a third of a cup under the canopy of the tree, especially around where the roots are.
All right, Steve.
It's kind of a special tree because my kids, my sons are colorblind, and they can see that color more than the others. And so I planted it for them, and I'm sad that it doesn't grow. So.
Yeah, if you want to hold on the line, we could talk a little more. We're up against the news, but we'd be glad to bring you back after.
Great, thanks.
All right, Steve, thanks for your call. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Our phone lines are open. You can call us 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. We had Steve on the line before the break. We were talking about golden-leafed trees and one that he had planted that wasn't doing so well. But off air, you did give him some suggestions for other trees if he needed that color of leaf that would really be helpful. And I think that would be helpful for some of our other listeners.
His kids had colorblindness, and he liked this particular maple with the yellow leaves because of the kids. His kids could actually see the true color of the leaves.
I get that. That's awesome.
There are several other species that have golden yellow leaves that would fit within that same genre of plants that might be useful. And we had talked about in the bushes, there are nine barks that are have golden leaves to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that. Then elderberry, you know, we have a purpley red leafed elderberry, several varieties. But there's also golden elderberry that are quite pretty. And then in the spirea, there are several yellow and golden leaf spireas. Spireas, gold mound is one of the most common. But there's several others, lemon mound, lime mound, all have kind of those yellowy to yellowy green leaves. And so there are those, but in perennials, there's a whole new world there, especially among the shade-tolerant plants, the coral bells. There are many varieties of yellow-leaved coral bells that need to be grown in shade. And so for kids, people that may have those sorts of challenges, there are some things out there, and those were a few that we discussed off the air to try to give his kids a more complete experience of what to grow in the yard and being able to fully see what they look like.
Right. Well, and plus for the rest of us, we want to mix in different colors. We don't want just all red-leafed or green-leafed. We want kind of a variety.
We do. And we sometimes mistake these yellow plants as having iron chlorosis, but they don't have it. It's just the nature of them genetically. And especially if you have a wide variety of things, sometimes these golden-leaved plants can be really a nice offset to the green that's everywhere else.
Right. We did have a listener on Facebook asking a question. And let's see, this is Clint. And he wanted to know, he says, you mentioned how leaving leaves can, if you leave them in flower beds, it can provide habitat for beneficial insects. But his question is, if you have an elm seed bug problem, would you still recommend leaving them, or would that just allow the elm seed bugs to propagate?
Well, the biology, the elm seed bugs, they will overwinter and, you know, in plant debris and things. And so then you may clean them up, but they could overwinter in any leaves or any plant debris or in mulch. And so, you know, I would clean them up under the tree, but in your flower beds and things, what you could do is work those into the soil in the fall so that they're not sitting all winter to eliminate some of the habitat. Grasshoppers, if you can work your soil twice in the fall, it works the soil and turns it enough that you have a really good chance of any grasshopper eggs in the soil being turned up and either being preyed on and fed on by something or being frozen during the winter.
Right. And we have talked a number of times about how you don't want to leave too many leaves on the grass unless you want some snow mold in the spring.
You absolutely don't want to leave a lot of leaves on your turf grass for that very reason. If you can, you have one leaf every 6 inches, that's fine.
We're talking a pile of leaves.
Yeah, but if you cannot see the grass through the leaves, you oftentimes develop snow mold under heavy snow in those areas.
Well, if there is a good thing about a long dry season in the winter, or late fall, I should say, because I guess we just started winter, it's that cleanup got done this year.
It did get done. And you still, even next week, we're supposed to be back up into the mid-40s. You've still got another week that will be fairly easy for cleanup.
I'm one of those people, I like to clean up all the leaves. I don't like any leaves left around, except around certain plants that are very sensitive to cold. And instead of trying to cover them, in the past few years, I've just let some leaves build up around them, and they seem to really protect them.
Yes, you can do this with roses, and there are a few others out there. The leaf cover will help protect overwintering cannas and overwintering gladiolas. There's a number of things that if you have 4 or 5 inches of leaves over the top, that will overwinter quite well here.
Yeah, I was like, okay, why am I doing all this work to cover them? They don't look any prettier covered for sure than the leaves that are around them.
Yeah, and especially if you have them in areas like up against a home,
right,
where the ground doesn't freeze as much, that leaf cover will really help them survive the winter just fine.
Right. We are coming back with the final segment of the KSL Greenhouse Show. Phone lines are open. You can call us right now at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Ton, I have this beautiful ficus tree that is now, oh my goodness, it's probably 5 feet tall, maybe 6 feet tall, that I saved a long time ago from my husband's office. They were just letting it die. They put it out in the trash, and I'm like, well, I want to try and save this scraggly thing. And so this had to be like 20, 30 years ago. Thing has done great. But the problem is now it's growing toward the light. It's huge. It's in a big pot. This doesn't necessarily need to be repotted, but I need to straighten it because now it is growing toward the light. How in the world am I going to do that?
There are a couple of different things you could try. One is turning it so that you're forcing
it. The backside isn't very pretty,
yeah,
and it's in the living room.
So if you turned it maybe a quarter of a turn.
Okay, maybe.
But all the right. ficus only put on new growth a few times a year, and so it would take a number of years for that backside to fill in if you use the turning method to get it to do that. Otherwise, you'd almost have to use a stake and some twine to pull it back in the direction you need it to go.
Or repot it.
And you could angle it in the pot a little bit.
Well, that's what I've done right now. I've angled it so that it's not about to fall over.
Yes. And so if you put it in a big enough pot, when you put it in there, you can turn it 10 or 15 degrees in one direction or another, and it won't hurt it.
Okay.
And then after that, you can sometimes find these stands to put the tree on that have wheels on the bottom that you could turn it a lot more easily than just trying to turn this big massive pot on its own. But if it's on carpet, that will put dents into your carpet.
Yeah, this is a beautiful, it's my living room's kind of formal, and that's why I even hesitate to ask you this question, because I don't want dirt all over this carpet. It's not easy to, it's in a huge pot right now. I don't know how big.
If it does need to be repotted, there are services, Cactus and Tropicals.
Call them up.
They can come in and they have professionals that can do this and absolutely clean up the mess.
I have to remind myself, I didn't pay anything for the plant,
yeah,
right? So a little care might be good.
Yeah, but it does. I mean, you're definitely going to pay for that service, but they do offer it.
Yeah, it's one of those problems with house plants. You know, my other house plants are in places where they're not going to mess anything up. But this one, near nice furniture, and it's super heavy. So it's going to take a couple of guys.
Yes,
to,
and that's why
to load this up. Yeah, and the professionals do some things with it
that come to your home and do it might be, but you definitely pay for that sort of service.
Well, since we're talking about ficus, and I'm pretty sure I have the Benjamin ficus because you had me look it up. But what special care do these plants need?
They don't like to be moved once you have them in a home. And so that's why you only spend them once a year, because if you move them, it's not that it hurts them, but they will show their frustration and anger by dropping a lot of their leaves when they're moved.
It seems like this tree does that like twice a year, like every other year.
Yes,
anyway.
And it is really common for them to shed a lot of leaves and then grow a new crop of leaves.
As it starts to get darker,
yes,
the sunlight diminishes.
Yes. Okay. And it's a lot of interesting physiology on how that happens that we won't go into now.
Yeah, 5 minutes.
But as the lower leaves, as light comes through your window, there's certain wavelengths that the leaves want, almost like a radio station, you know, specific wavelengths. And the deeper the shade, the less of these specific wavelengths coming through hit the leaves. And when there is a minimum amount of these specific wavelengths of light hitting the lower canopy where the shadier areas is, the tree can say, hey, these leaves are no longer profitable for me to keep, and it drops them because of the lack of that specific wavelength of light hitting it.
When it first started doing that, I thought the tree was dying every single time it did it. Then I realized that it does it every so often. It
yes.
just needs to, and it's fine.
Sometimes, I believe the Benjamin fig is native to India in areas that have a rainy season and a dry season, and it is really common for tropical trees in these areas to at least be semi-deciduous, where many of the leaves drop during the dry season and then regrow during the wet season. And so there could be not only the shade causing it, but it could be a natural cycle that it, not that you're drying the tree out, but it there is something inherent to being dry that says, okay, I need to go at least semi-dormant, and they do lose their leaves.
Interestingly enough, this year it did not drop the leaves. This was kind of like the off year. And I'm wondering if because of our warmer temperatures and more sunlight, that had something to do with it.
It may have, and it just could be, like you said, the off year. But that's one thing with Benjamin fig, and there's a few other closely related species, that they'll drop half or 60, 70% of the leaves, and it's just a natural thing, and then they regrow within a month, and you're back in business.
Okay. We do have a texter with a question now. This person says, are metal planting beds too hot for raising vegetables in?
It depends on a lot of factors. Right against the metal, that metal will heat up enough that within 3 or 4 inches of the metal, the roots die out because of how hot the soil is. But once you get beyond about 6 inches, that is really offset, especially if you're irrigating, because the water, as it evaporates, cools the soil. Mike Karen is a little bit more adamant about the metal raised beds being damaging than I am. But what I've recommended people do, if they're worried about it, if their vegetables aren't performing and they suspect it's the heat, they can paint the metal white with just an outdoor paint, and that white color will cool it down significantly.
The problem with social media, Instagram, is you see so many different ways to create these raised beds. And the metal planters look super cool. But I've wondered the same thing as this listener, because that just seems super hot. So if you are planning now, maybe metal is not the best way to go. But if you have it, then maybe.
Yeah, and if you're going to use it, just make sure that your beds are 4 feet wide so that you have plenty of room in the middle for them to grow. I don't know what you do, because there's advantages and disadvantages to every raised bed material. Wood breaks down, even if it's red wood. Mm-hmm. Treated wood has those potentially toxic chemicals in it that people don't want to have around. There's just something, the plastics may off-gas a little bit into the soil, and they bow if you're using the plastic fencing for your raised bed. So there's disadvantages to all of them, and the metal, I think, has longevity, especially if you're using galvanized metal or aluminum. It's just that you may need to paint it or may need to make it wide enough so that you have enough room in there.
You know, you defeat the purpose if you paint them white because they look pretty cool the way they are.
They do.
They do. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today for the KSL Greenhouse. We hope you have a very Merry Christmas. If you're just tuning in, you know that you can find us in podcast form. You can podcast, you can listen to the entire show at kslpodcast.com. And if you're just tuning in, you missed the plant of the week, which was holly, and you offered just such a wonderful historical perspective on holly. So I hope people listen to that.
Yeah, listen to that first hour and you'll find all about the religious significance of holly.
We also talked about how to take care of evergreen trees in the 9 o'clock hour and 10 o'clock. We talked about caring for your houseplants. Have a great weekend and a very Merry Christmas.